Stay tuned now for Dr. Stephen Zelikoff and a program you will not want to miss. Bone Talk. That's Bone Talk with Dr. Stephen Zelikoff on 1460 WVOX.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Bone Talk. I'm Dr. Stephen Zelikoff, and we're very lucky today to have as our guest Dr. Christian Brotea, who is an orthopedic spine specialist. And our topic today is one that's really, really important, and that's pediatric and adolescent as well as adult scoliosis. So, Dr. Brotea, welcome, and thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
Of course. Dr. Brotea, can you tell us a little about yourself and what some of your interests are, what some of your background is, and then we'll start talking a little bit about what our topic is today.
So I'm an orthopedic spine surgeon trained here locally at the New York Medical College and subsequently did a spine fellowship at Cleveland Clinic. And for the past 15 years, I've been here in practice in the lower Westchester area in Harrison at Specialty Orthopedics.
So welcome. Now, I know that you have privileges at many of the regional hospitals, including Westchester Medical Center at White Plains Hospital, and you run the spine service at Montefiore and New Rochelle as well. And I know you've been dealing with a lot of complex spinal problems, including everything from sports injuries in the back all the way through to spine fractures, disc herniations, scoliosis, as well as spinal stenosis. So I think that the topic that we're going to talk about today is going to be scoliosis, which is something that affects, I think, like 2% of the population. It's been remarkable. Can you tell us a little bit about what scoliosis is?
So basically, scoliosis is a curvature of the spine. Curvature, sometimes a rotational component to it. And there are really two types. One that we commonly see in kids, growing adults. And then there's a different type of scoliosis that we see in adults themselves, and that's called the degenerative scoliosis and adult scoliosis. Most commonly when people think of scoliosis, they think of the pediatric or the one associated with children. So we have what's called idiopathic scoliosis, basically meaning that we don't know the cause of it, but it does run in families, so there is a genetic component to it. There's also another type of pediatric scoliosis that's called congenital scoliosis. And that's a much more rare type of curvature of the spine that's detected at birth. And it usually has to do with some type of spine abnormality, a lack of adequate growth of vertebrae, so on and so forth. And then there's a third type of pediatric or child scoliosis, and that's a neuromuscular scoliosis. And that's where the curvature of the spine is caused by unevenness, an abnormality in the muscles and nerves that support the spine. So patients, for example, with cerebral palsy, spinal bifida, muscular dystrophy, they develop pretty severe curvatures of the spine due to that unevenness of the muscle tone. In adults, on the other hand, the most common reason why adults have a scoliosis is because of degenerative reasons, meaning usually there's some type of wear and tear, arthritic condition of the spine that causes a malalignment of the vertebrae, which can also lead to a curvature, which at the end of the day looks very similar to a pediatric scoliosis. However, it happens in adults.
And that's more from the arthritic component, where that, as opposed to the children, where it's more of the, either the idiopathic or the other causes that you had mentioned.
Right. So, in kids and pediatric cases, the idiopathic scoliosis is because of abnormal development of the bones, the soft ligaments, the weak muscles, abnormal balance, whereas in degenerative scoliosis, as seen in adults, is due to normal degenerative processes seen usually in the lower back. And it does tend to occur as the patient ages, so later in life.
How is that different from spinal stenosis?
So stenosis basically is a term that refers to narrowing of the spinal canal, which can lead to pinching of the nerves going down to the arms or to the legs from the spine. stenosis is also caused most commonly by arthritis. The same type of arthritis that can cause a scoliosis or a curvature of the spine can also cause narrowing of the spinal canal, which again houses the nerves extending down to the arms or the legs, and can lead to patients experiencing sciatica-type symptoms, pain, numbness, tingling, weakness.
Now, going back to pediatric scoliosis, what are the ages commonly where you would notice scoliosis in the child?
So it's interesting. With idiopathic scoliosis, so we talked about the congenital and neuromuscular scoliosis. Those are the types that are usually seen very early on, because patients are dealing with those issues from the very beginning. Idiopathic scoliosis is something that's noticeable mostly when patients start growing faster. And I would say it's usually seen diagnosed in the early teens, up to late teens, and sometimes even in their early 20s.
So it usually comes around the time of their growth spurt?
Exactly. And it's most commonly seen in females, and typically the fastest, highest growth spurt usually occurs right before their first period. So we have to keep an eye on the degree of the curvature while kids are growing fast because of the...
We're on the phone with Dr. Christian Brotea, an orthopedic spine specialist, and we're talking about scoliosis in adults and in kids. So tell us a little bit about what the symptoms are of pediatric and adolescent scoliosis.
So the thing to note about pediatric scoliosis is that it's mostly asymptomatic, meaning most patients, most kids with scoliosis, they don't develop any symptoms. They don't develop pain. They don't have any sciatica-type symptoms. They're really asymptomatic, which is why screening for scoliosis is important. The way they usually present is with a deformity. So, again, scoliosis is a curvature of the spine. It usually also involves a rotational component to it, which can cause visible deformity sometimes. So sometimes the shoulder blade can pop out. Sometimes the shoulders can be uneven with the ground. There are different physical aspects to it, but it's otherwise asymptomatic, so it doesn't cause any pain. Usually the way it's diagnosed is with a screening. We basically, when we see a child with scoliosis, we conduct a thorough physical exam. We look at the back, we look at the chest, the pelvis, the legs, the feet, the skin. We check the length of the limbs, of the arms and the legs. And then usually the way it's screened in school is by having the patient leaning forward or bending forward, and then a rotational component of the curvature of the spine can be noted. And that's where you can see the rib cage sort of uneven with the ground when the child is bending forward. So that's usually how it's diagnosed. Typically, patients don't come in to be checked for it because, again, they're not having symptoms from it.
Now, most schools, I think, historically had done some type of scoliosis screening to look over curvature. And I know that, you know, pediatricians, I'm sure, also screen as well. Should parents screen their kids as well for this, or is this something that should be left to the pediatricians? What do you recommend?
So my recommendation is basically if you have any concerns about the child's development, about the growth, and specifically the things we just talked about, which would be the unevenness of the shoulders to the ground, the shoulder blades sticking out, or unevenness with their rib cage, especially with children in their teens, I would approach that with the pediatrician. The pediatrician can easily check for it. Sometimes they can use a scoliometer, which is where they actually measure that rotational component to the scoliosis. They can obtain x-rays, and ultimately, if a diagnosis of scoliosis is made, they will be seen by us, somewhere like me, myself in the office, and then we can treat it appropriately.
Now, when you talk about scoliosis, you talk about the degrees of curvature that sort of get involved. What are the thresholds in terms of treating scoliosis? When do you, how do you treat it in terms of, you know, mostly I would assume it's not surgical, most of it's sort of more conservative. So how do you make decisions in terms of how to best treat this?
So the treatment of scoliosis in children depends on a number of factors. So we have to look at the type of scoliosis, how severe it is. We actually obtain x-rays where we can actually perform measurements of the curve. We look at the family history of scoliosis. We look at the child's age and how much longer of a period of growth they have left. Typically, if the curvature of the spine measures, let's say, around 25 degrees or so, and the child has a fair amount of spine growth left, then we usually use a brace that can be worn about 18 hours a day, and that keeps the deformity under control and prevents further progression of the scoliosis. If the curvature is really severe, so it's above 45 degrees or so, or the child is symptomatic from it, and again, I said that most children are not symptomatic. They don't have pain from it, but sometimes if they do, then that's a consideration for surgery. Most children, over 95% of them, they fall into the category of treating it conservatively, either with a brace or sometimes with nothing if the curvature is not significant enough.
Now, how often, if you're treating it either conservatively where you're observing it or you're bracing it, and say a child is picked up at, say, age 12 or 13, how long do you need to follow that patient, and at what point are they sort of out of the woods in terms of getting more progression of their curve?
So as I tell the parents, the curvature can continue to progress while they're growing. Typically, once they're done growing, and it depends on the sex of the child. So for females, usually 2 to 3 years earlier than in males. But once the children are done growing, then the curve is not expected to progress unless it's above 45 degrees, which is why we use that threshold number to treating somebody surgically if they need it, because we know even once they've reached skeletal maturity, once they've stopped growing, that curvature will worsen, will continue to worsen if it's above 45 degrees to start with. So we do everything that we can, whether it's with a brace or nothing, to keep that curvature under 45 degrees by the time they're done growing. In females, about 3 or 4 years after their first period, so it's usually around the age of 14 or 15. In males, we can judge it radiographically by obtaining x-rays, and we can tell if they're done growing sometimes anywhere from 16 to the age of 18. So it all depends on the type of curvature, depends on the sex of the patient and their growth potential left.
And again, we're on the phone with Dr. Christian Brotea, an orthopedic spine specialist with Specialty Orthopedics in Harrison, New York. Now, again, Dr. Brotea, when we're sort of looking at these curves, for kids that aren't going to be surgical candidates, and I want to talk a little bit about surgery afterwards, do you limit their activities in terms of sports and things of that nature? Or what do you tell them that they can do and what can't they do?
So the answer is no. We don't limit them from a physical standpoint. Like I said, they're usually asymptomatic. They don't have pain. They can go ahead with the normal activities. Now, obviously, if we do end up operating and trying to correct the curvature, then certain spine precautions will have to be put in place. But with that, in the absence of surgery, and if their curve is less than 45 degrees, we let them perform their normal activities. We actually encourage stretching. We encourage strengthening, core strengthening, postural control as much as possible to help them with their curvature.
Now, one thing that I just want to dispel sort of a myth, in that wearing a heavy backpack, standing up straight, stuff like that, does that, cause you to have scoliosis? Will a big backpack make you more apt to develop scoliosis?
No. So I think that's been dispelled. But what I would say is that it is important for the child or whether we're dealing with adult scoliosis with adults, it is important for them to focus on their posture and to focus on core strengthening, body mechanics, proper body mechanics when lifting, when doing strenuous activities. And those things do help with overall alignment. And it's important to do that the earlier the better, because that's when the spine is still flexible. Once we move into adult scoliosis, as opposed to the pediatric one we just talked about, in adult scoliosis, the condition that's causing it is arthritis, which by definition is basically stiffness of joints or lack of motion. So curvatures in adults are much more difficult to correct, and working on postural control, working on core strengthening, stretching is not going to be quite as helpful as it would be in children.
Now, when we start talking about surgery, and tell us a little bit about what the surgical options in managing kids with scoliosis, and this primarily when dealing with and talking about idiopathic scoliosis. I mean, obviously, the care is probably a little bit different in kids with congenital scoliosis and with neuromuscular scoliosis. But can you tell us a little about what some of the advances have been in treating both children as well as adults with scoliosis surgically?
So with congenital and neuromuscular scoliosis, again, remember, these are due to problems which are obvious at birth most of the time or very early on. So once that diagnosis is made with children, usually at the age of 3, 4, 5 years old, the decision has to be made to start treating it early. The issue with treating it at that point, especially from a surgical standpoint, is that surgery involves typically fusing their spines, correcting the curvature, but fusing their spine with screws and rods, which is a large surgery prone to complications. But what we try to do is allow them to give them as much growth as possible prior to performing the surgery. So there are all types of advances where you can actually put in growing rods where you attempt to correct the scoliosis and still allow them to grow at the same time. Once they've reached their teens and their growth potential is much more limited, at that point you can make the decision if they need to correct their curve and actually perform the surgery. And the surgery in an idiopathic scoliosis or somebody in their teens that still has a flexible spine basically involves making an incision over the back, getting access to the vertebrae themselves, locking the vertebrae in place with instrumentation and correcting the curvature and locking everything in place with rods. So it's a relatively major surgery, but it is very successful in correcting curvatures. And patients are typically very happy after a scoliosis surgery because they're doing well, their posture is corrected, and ultimately they'll be able to return back to normal life.
And those rods stay put indefinitely, or are they removed at some point?
Yeah, so the instrumentation that we place in idiopathic scoliosis, the screws and the rods, they'll basically stay in. They'll be covered in bone growth, and they'll become basically a part of the patient's spine. And younger children with scoliosis that's treated surgically, like we're talking about the congenital and the neuromuscular scoliosis, those rods can be lengthened, again, to allow for more growth since the children are very young. But in idiopathic scoliosis where the children are almost done growing, the rods will stay in place and will get locked in place.
And what about surgical treatment for people with adult scoliosis?
So adult scoliosis is an entirely different proposition, and we may end up having another discussion about this separately because it's a whole topic onto itself. But degenerative scoliosis usually presents with a very stiff curve where patients are out of balance. So the goal of surgery in that case is to restore their balance and help them with their pain, with the underlying stenosis, which again is pinching up the nerves in the spinal canal is due to the arthritis that caused the scoliosis in the first place. So the goals of surgery in adult scoliosis are completely different from the goals of surgery in idiopathic scoliosis.
Now, when you're dealing with people with scoliosis, you're dealing mostly, maybe referring primarily to someone with a curvature of the spine. Now, there's also a phenomenon called kyphosis, where somebody will have like a hump, like they're bent over their neck at top, and particularly women tend to get that more with osteoporosis and collapse of the vertebrae as well. Can you just comment on that as well?
Right. So, technically speaking, kyphosis, which is the basically the hunching that you're talking about, that's still technically a type of scoliosis. But yes, that's a separate problem unto itself. The issue with kyphosis or hunching or losing balance from front to back is that it can cause, it's very symptomatic and it's very, it's much more common in adults as opposed to kids. And it causes a lot of pain. It progresses very quickly. So it's something to keep an eye out for, and by itself may require surgery if really severe, because we know that patients with kyphosis, they end up having a very difficult time with maintaining the balance, with basic things such as ambulation, getting up from a seated position, with performing strenuous activities, any type of even activities of daily living. So it's a very disabling condition if severe, and it does warrant treatment unto itself.
Now, so in the last few minutes that we have sort of in our program, what would you like to sort of share with our audience in terms of monitoring scoliosis, treatment opportunities, and what are the risks if you don't do anything? What are the risks of untreated scoliosis?
So if your child has been diagnosed with scoliosis or you're concerned about the overall posture, you're concerned about their curvature, then have it checked out. And the important thing with children is to follow up periodically with your doctor as indicated. Curves are very important to monitor closely in kids because they can worsen very quickly, and they can basically become surgical issues if not treated properly conservatively. So the important thing about this, when you're talking about children's scoliosis, is to follow up as indicated and make sure it gets treated properly. With adults, the issue is that it's a much more difficult problem to treat. It's hard to treat conservatively, but it can be very disabling. So in adults, it has to be also followed up appropriately and make sure you get started on with treatment as soon as possible, and ultimately follow up with a surgeon such as myself if it gets to the point where it becomes disabling.
Again, we're on the phone with Dr. Christian Brotea, orthopedic spine specialist, working out of Specialty Orthopedics in Harrison, New York. You can reach Dr. Brotea at 914-686-0111 or through his website at specialtyorthony. So thank you again, Dr. Brotea, for joining us on our episode of Bone Talk. I'm Dr. Steven Zelikoff, and thank you again. Until next month, thanks for listening to Bone Talk.